Friday the 13th, actually. It seems like not an unlucky day. I'm with that famous lapidary expert, Lowell. Yep, you're Lowell. What's happening with you these days?
Nothing.
This is for Free Radio in Santa Cruz, in case you're wondering. I do a show twice a week.
You do?
Uh-huh.
Is that at UCSC?
No, it's local underground micro-broadcasting radio. It's on homeless rights, civil rights for the poor, things like that. The old topics, you know, that I've always been interested in.
Yeah, that's good.
Any sign that people are it's more of a live and let live attitude, have you noticed in the last year, or is it less so? What's your sense of it?
I think it's kind of going the other direction in general. But, it seems not too bad down here right now, but I think there's going to be a lot of poor people soon, poorer people.
Is that based on your sense of national politics or some other barometer?
Yeah, national politics.
When I talked to you about a year and a half ago, you were working on jewelry. Has that been your major line of business?
Yeah, I teach jewelry classes and make jewelry.
I've noticed.
And I travel.
I know that no guns. So you know no guns.
Yeah, I saw no guns. No guns. I saw an interesting exchange at the farmers market with no guns and a
couple cops.
Yeah, a couple of cops. And
I heard about that. What did you?
Yeah, they told her that. And I think this is important for all the craftspeople that you are in compliance if you put a sign that says donations, and you're welcome to refuse a donation if it isn't what you like. And I think it's very important that we keep on this because it creates jobs for people, and that's at least a start. I think that we really need some leadership to have a market here with the farmers market. And I don't know, I'm not here enough, but I think that if it doesn't happen soon, that we should just sue the city of Santa Cruz as individuals and elected officials for being out of line with the federal government's attempt to put people off welfare and to create jobs for people.
Along with Mr. Twister, perhaps.
Because it isn't fair to ticket people who are doing honest work and who have their own jobs at the same time that you're complaining about people not working and trying to get people off of welfare. That's hypocritical and ironic.
Now you were saying a year or two ago when I spoke to you that they had a much more positive plan up in Oregon where you came from.
The Oregon Supreme Court on October 29th
of last year?
Last year ruled in a special session of the Supreme Court that moved to Lincoln High School in Portland that the act of selling is protected. Freedom of expression, and that's a very good decision because it creates a job for all these people who have their own jobs. If the cops in the city would just quit stealing their jobs and stealing their money, they might not have to pay.
Do you recall the name of that case?
That's Frog versus the City of Eugene and the state of Oregon.
And what impact did that case have on Eugene? What was the case situation before, and what was the situation after that case was decided?
Well, it was very important because it went back and forth in the courts, and a new organization was formed called Eugene in Common with the Downtown Association, the City of Eugene, and the Saturday Market all coming together and deprivatizing the mall so that people now in Eugene can set up a table and work and make their own crafts, all handmade crafts, any day, every day, for $1 or $2 for a big table.
And how long has this been the practice up there?
This has been going on now for 2 years.
And before that, what was the rule?
Before that, we only had the Saturday market on Saturday. and the Saturday Market moved its offices into the downtown mall, and the Saturday Market staff now goes into the mall, not just in the two park blocks where they used to be. So basically, Eugene is a free country.
How big a
Santa Cruz is not.
How big a city is Eugene? Compared to Santa Cruz?
It's about like Santa Cruz. It's
45,000 people?
The Santa Cruz Mall, the Eugene Mall, and the Boulder, Colorado Mall were all built by the same people. They're somewhat similar, but the policies are not. Eugene is the most free of all. Other places, they still ticket people for working.
Now, does Eugene have some sort of... can any street performer set up his guitar and start playing, or is there some sort of, have I heard there's some sort of talent license or something? I'm not sure if that's true, is
that? No, people can play there, have always been able to play music, and that was true in the mall even before they started allowing people to sell crafts. But the Saturday Market also has a very good and free music program along with the food court every week. So any musicians who want to go there can contact the Saturday Market, and they'll probably get to perform.
How much time have you spent in Eugene in the last year?
I spend about 6 months here, 6 months there for the last 5 years.
So when were you last up there?
Last week.
So what about, I'll ask you about some trivial things, but things that perhaps are not so trivial to people on the streets. What about restroom facilities? Are there 24-hour restroom facilities available up there for people who need to use the bathroom?
The Saturday Market has porta-potties that are always very clean. They set them up along with the rest of the whole setup on Saturday morning, and they maintain them there.
What about the rest of the week?
I'm not sure that they have porta potties the rest of the week, but there are lots of restaurants and things around the mall. I've never really had any problem there.
You know, there is a proposal that has been mentioned to me by Bob LaMonica, who is behind the Recall D.A.R. Danner campaign, which fell short recently, but did get 10,000 signatures.
Yeah, I saw that in the paper.
He's suggesting that bicyclists are talking about closing the mall to all the pedestrian and bicycle traffic, and then maybe instituting some reforms that might make the mall live up to its original purpose.
Well, the exhaust down here does stink, and the mall isn't very long. I don't see why it couldn't be a walking mall. It's in Eugene and Boulder, there's one or two streets that cut through, but there's not this length of traffic going back and forth and all around. And I personally wouldn't mind parking. There's enough parking off street up within a block all up and down the mall, but I think that might be an excellent idea. It would certainly improve the air quality.
What are the laws like in Eugene for, let's say, sleeping outdoors? Are people ticketed for camping regularly the way they are here in Santa Cruz under Santa Cruz's notorious sleeping ban?
Well, for people with vehicles, the national forests up there are all free for camping 14 days out of any 30-day period, and there are a lot more places available for people to do that, and also the buses up there are 80 cents.
Are those the state parks or the national?
The national parks.
And is that 14 days out of 30 days every month, or is there a
every
limit?
Month? Yeah.
Oh, really? So, you know, California is much more restrictive in its campgrounds in the national, or at least the state parks.
Well, yeah, there really isn't the same situation around here. I'm not aware of any national parks that close by. And the city of Eugene does have an anti-camping policy, but I've never seen the cops there bother anybody in vehicles, except in the parks. Maybe if they're a bunch of drunks and somebody's gotten stabbed or something, they'll come through and deal with the problems on a case-by-case basis. But there's also, I've seen a lot of flyers up there, which I think is a good idea in Santa Cruz too. I think that, that say, if you've ever gotten a ticket for camping, please call this number because your civil rights may have been violated, and we'd like to have a class action suit to stop this kind of
I'd like to see that
violation.
I'd like to see that. I mean, we've been trying.
It is a violation under the color of law, regardless of whether the
whatever the law happens to be.
It's a violation of the Constitution, and that is the law. And that law is on the side of the people, incidentally, because of the 1964 Civil Rights Act that's recently been upheld, and I think the cities are they're liable as...
What part of the 1964 Civil Rights Act are you referring to?
Well, individuals and elected officials are liable for any civil rights violations under the color of law, both as individuals and elected officials. And I think the city and the city attorney and all of the council should take a very careful look at this, because the law definitely is on the side of the people.
Actually, there are laws as far back as the Civil War which supposedly uphold the rights of individuals to redress if they are violated by officials under the color of law. Reconstruction Act.
There's also a state law that requires you to stop and rest if you're in a van, if you're tired, for 4 hours. And there are a lot of good reasons that not to bother people, and the cities, unfortunately, and the states haven't learned.
Have you spent any time in
other people?
Have you spent any time in Ashland?
I love Ashland. Yeah.
Now I understand there's been something of a crackdown in Ashland over this summer. Have you been there at all?
No, I haven't. Ashland is kind of small, but Lithia Park is a very beautiful place. They have a community center there and some nice meals. And there's a number you can call if you need food in Ashland, and they'll call you back within 15 minutes and deliver the food box to you wherever you are. I think that's good. I don't know about sleeping in the park.
Well, I notice we have a circle of criminal activity forming near where we're standing outside the Pacific Cookie Company. These three individuals are sitting within 10 feet of a shop, a violation of the Santa Cruz downtown ordinance.
They're eating cookies.
And they're also eating cookies.
With their heads.
I think we better call the hosts.
There's cookie monsters.
The green shirts who enforce the
law. Everywhere down here.
Indeed.
Too many people having too much fun down here. They should all be hanged from all these little lighted trees.
Indeed, indeed, yes. Well, Lowell, any final words about your predictions for the next few months? Do you ever use the facilities for camping, that you know, like the open air shelter here, the homeless campground?
No, I don't.
Any friends who do?
I never go down there. I don't know. I don't know why I don't.
Because probably it feels like a degraded situation, perhaps. I don't know. Or perhaps because you've never even wandered down there. I don't know.
Well, we definitely live in a two-tiered society, and I think that something needs to be done about poverty in general, and it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Eat the rich, perhaps. Well, thank you, Lowell. I appreciate that. And
redistribute the wealth.
This will be going over Free Radio Santa Cruz on Monday or next Friday.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for all your good work.
Hey, you too.
suggested that they are not in compliance with it, or, you know, said that they were not in compliance with it. Trial was supposed to start today at 9 o'clock, but as you know how the court cases and the system runs, it was put on as a trailer case and won't be assigned to court until either later today or maybe tomorrow.
I see. So those of us who couldn't make it may be able to tune in tomorrow for the... how long is the trial expected to take?
I'm not sure. What I'll do is give the Legal Aid Society phone number, and I'll give my own voicemail number mm-hmm. to where people who want to attend can find out some additional information, or they could call the calendar clerk at the court itself.
Okay.
Legal Aid Society's number, and that is the local Santa Cruz Legal Aid, 458-1086, and mm-hmm. Gary McNeil is one of the primary lawyers on that,
mm-hmm.
and, or his office could tell folks that are interested. My number, and that's Robert Lee, and it's 427-5335.
427-5335.
That's correct. And there were quite a few people there today on both sides of public interest with this public interest case. And everybody's running around like with their head, chicken with their head cut off, trying to find out where it was happening. And a low staff number.
Whose court was it in?
Pardon me?
Whose courtroom was it in?
It hadn't been assigned.
I see, so it still hasn't been assigned.
Still hasn't been assigned.
So this is a case which it will require the county to follow the state law and build several thousand low-income housing units when they've only built about 13% of the number they're supposed to have built, something like that?
That's true. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but they're way behind in their compliance with the fair share quota or numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the relief that we're asking for is, one, if we win the case, that the court require them to come up with a program that is legal and sufficient within 120 days, and during the time that they're making this element up, there'll be no more building permits given out during that time until they come up, until they comply with at least coming up with an element within the planning structure.
Mm-hmm.
So you asked me to call in, and I thought I'd, since I saw so many people down there looking to get in some information on it, I thought I'd call in and give you what little information I had.
You're still at the courthouse now?
No, I have left and at my residence now.
Oh, so you've returned to your lair, so to speak.
That's correct.
Well, come on down to the Police Review Board, which is meeting at 5 o'clock today at City Hall. You're invited to come to that.
Right, I have interest in seeing what's going on there after that letter to the police department.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I actually should brief our audience on what's going on.
That would be good. Well, I'll let you go then. Thanks for the time on the air.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Robert Patton Lee, who is part of a major lawsuit against the county, which is being handled by Legal Aid, attempting to get the county to build its fair share of low-income affordable housing before it starts giving away the store to all the big-time fancy developers who want to, you know, whoop it up for the rich folks but leave the rest of us out in the rain, so to speak. Yeah, police review, Citizens Police Review. Interesting situations are developing there. As you know, I've often criticized the Citizens Police Review Board as a kind of a toy pooch that doesn't do diddly squat. And I think that criticism is still quite pertinent. They do meet once a month, and I was able to talk to one of the Citizens Police Review Board members, a man named John Malkin, who's probably the most liberal activist member on the board. He was part of a coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board, a group headed by Margaret Mara, Ben Rice, and other civil rights attorneys who are concerned with establishing a police review board. Did good work on it, although they excluded me and certain other radicals from their meetings because they decided that, actually it was a private decision by Margaret Marr, who was part of a factional dispute going back a long time. She just made that decision and we challenged it. It produced a lot of ill will. It's too bad. But as I said, Malkin's a good man, and so is Margaret Marr for that matter. She's a good woman, and they're all good people, but I wish we could all pull together on this stuff. John actually may be coming on for live interviews and at least perhaps a taped segment each week, we hope, because John is rather discouraged, I understand, about the progress or lack of progress of the Citizens Police Review Board. They're generally rubber stamping what the police are doing. In the one case where there was a flagrant, obvious violation, where Sergeant Hobo Hunter Hennig, as I call him, Bob Hennig, actually brushed some woman's breast intentionally and admitted it, the review board didn't find that inappropriate behavior. Amazing. I'll have to recommend to some of my more abusive friends that they go join the police force immediately if they want to get their rocks off. We had an interesting conversation, John and I. There is a question that will be coming up at today's Citizens Police Review Board is going to be the question of keeping citizen complaints confidential. The police department wants to make sure that when a complaint comes in, it becomes a part of the officer's personnel file and confidential, and thus prohibit the Citizens Police Review Board from telling the public just what the hell is going on, who is being complained about, what the complaint is, and so forth. And they're going so far as to say that even after the police review board has looked over the entire case and, let's say, found an officer sustained a complaint against an officer, they can't say who the officer is, they can't say who the complainant is, they can't say what the complaint is about, because that's all confidential. If this sounds like bullshit to you, you're on the right track. That's going to be discussed today at the Citizens Police Review Board, whether the Citizens Police Review Board should be turned into not just a rubber stamp, but a rubber stamp with a muffle in a dark closet. I mean, it's really becoming kind of ludicrous, the extent to which the Police Officers Association wishes to completely vitiate and dismantle even this tiny, pathetic imitation of a police review board that we have here in Santa Cruz. Now, John has said that they've been investigating other cities. Some cities don't release information. Berkeley, on the other hand, releases everything, but Berkeley has actually a more decent system, although it too has its problems, and I have a long interview on that, which I hope to play from Police Review Commissioner Aaron Handel up there at some point. Berkeley releases everything. San Jose is the most similar, and hopefully staff member Gary Yemeni will give a report on that and let us know that today at the 5 o'clock Police Review Board meeting at City Hall what's happening. Another question is who's going to make the choices on the law in terms of certain internal matters with the Police Review Board. Are we going to go to the city attorney, who also defends the police department and has a vested interest in stopping lawsuits against the city? Or are we going to go to an independent counsel who might give a fairer assessment? Well, obviously, my conclusion is clear from the way I phrased the question. This board needs to go to independent counsel, and it's been sitting on its butt, or I should say its butts, for the last year. They've been seated for a year, and they haven't sought any independent counsel to make sure that they can release their report so that Chief Belcher, for example, comes up with the goods on why he hasn't been logging in phone complaints, or has he been logging in phone complaints, and if he has, why is the number so low, and why isn't he answering letters for weeks and weeks and weeks? What's going on here? I mean, we have numerous questions which I continue to raise at city council meetings and police review board meetings, which Margaret Mahler continues to raise, which even John Malkin, who's on the board, continues to raise, and which the board continues to duck, police department continues to duck, city council continues to ignore. So if you want to observe this strange charade in action, 5 o'clock today at City Hall, come on down and take a look. What else is happening around police review? Oh, yes. Well, the Police Review Board issues a kind of a flyer every 3 or 4 months, sort of a bulletin. And apparently, they've decided not to tell you the number of sustained complaints in its flyer. In other words, they're not telling you the names, they're not telling you the officers' names, they're not telling you what the complaints are, but not only that, they're not even going to give you the numbers. Hey, you're going to have to go to a soothsayer to figure out what's going on, or maybe a psychiatrist to have all their heads examined. I don't know, and it's depressing, it's weird, it's quite predictable, given the fact that this is not a real police review board, this is a substitute for a police review board. What else was happening? I didn't get to the last meeting, but Andy Crane, Officer Crane, against whom I filed a complaint last week, by the way, my first complaint under the new police review board, and by the way, if you do file a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board, make sure that you demand a public hearing. That's something that no one has done yet except me. But you have a right to request and secure a public hearing. You also have the right to request, although not necessarily to secure, an independent investigation. That, however, because of our wonderful city council, so liberal in song and story, has refused to fund it on a regular basis. They have to go to the city council with any particular request for an independent investigation. The last independent investigation died a burning. That was Butchie Baker, the infamous Sticky Fingers Baker case of Officer Lauren Baker, accused of abusing 9+ women, improperly touching and searching them in the course of his duties in 1989, 1990, 1991, thereabouts. That was before the police review board was had been seated, but it was not before the city council had voted to do an investigation and then quietly killed it after a compliant grand jury and the compliant DA had said, hey, there's no problem here, similar to what the compliant DA and the compliant grand jury had done in the case of Art Danner, although the Danner case apparently is still being investigated by the grand jury. Let's hope that they get grander than they've been so far. Police review at 5 o'clock today. There is a change in PLA leadership, by the way. That's Police Officer Association. That's the union guys who pass through Sacramento everything that the cops want. It was headed by Steve Clark, the kicker, as I call him. He's Sergeant Clark. He took one of my complaints a couple weeks ago against Chris Brazda. I believe we discussed that whole issue a couple weeks back. There's been some violence on the part of one person toward me, and I'm unable to resolve it by any kind of informal agreements. I'm going to the court system with that, which is probably a complete mistake, but I feel like I have no alternative. It's proceeding apace. Probably not proceeding at all, but anyway, it's been done. Anyway, Sergeant Clark had previously been the head of the Police Officers Association. Now it's some new guy. Clark was out for John Malkin's scalp. That's the Police Review Board Commissioner, the most liberal guy personally. And the Police Review Board wrote Clark a memo saying that was inappropriate. And who knows? Maybe he was there was a shakeup in the organization because of that. I doubt it somehow, but maybe so. Anyway, come and see all this yourself. Don't take my word for it. 5 o'clock today at City Hall, and then 2 hours later, trudge on through the rain or swim on over to the Veterans Hall basement of the Underground Cafe and come to the SOS meeting. We can use you, and use you, and then use you again, hopefully. What else is cooking? Well, there was a SCAN Annual Awards dinner on Saturday, and I was hoping that best in the business Becky Johnson was going to talk to you about that in an interview today, but unfortunately she has not showed and she has not called, and so I'm going to have to kind of relate to you what she told me. She went to this SCAN Awards dinner, and she said the most noteworthy thing was not one progressive had diddly squat to say about the campground. SCAN, for those of you who don't know, is called Santa Cruz Action Network, and it is the group of political honchos who put the current six progressives in office. Six progressives. We're talking Jane Hokimana, Cynthia Matthews, who deserves a name of her own, Squawk Box Scott Kennedy, or Cave-In Kennedy, as I've called him on occasion, Birdseed Byers, Robocop Mike Rapkin. I think I'm missing somebody. Oh, yeah. Say Little Celia Scott. The entire gang of rascals who call themselves progressive but can't seem to get it together to say, we won't let you drive 150, 200 homeless people away to set up a $1.3 million 48-person trailer project. That is on the agenda for tomorrow night. City Council, actually tomorrow afternoon, 3:30. Be there. Be square. Bring your sleeping bag. Bring your mouth. Bring your friends. It's important to show up and challenge this crap. The campers may have been given a month, but as William Thunder Mike noted earlier, the camper who called in, the rains are flooding that field. And unless we can get a pump out there, unless we can deal with the crisis out there, there may be people on the street for Christmas, with their tents in front of the merchants downtown. Take a note, merchants. It may put a damper on your San Jose holiday profits. So let's get it together while we can. I see the door is opening. I think that Uh-oh, it looks like the next shift is sneaking in 9 minutes early. Well, it's not going to work. I'm going to stay here for the next 9 minutes, no matter what happens. What else is cooking? Gosh, so much to say, so little tiny poo. I have loads of tapes, I have loads of clippings, I have this and that, I even have a few notes. Keith McHenry of San Francisco Food Not Bombs, usually a well-spoken man. I frequently play his stuff on the air. In fact, starting at 1 o'clock, I'm going to put on a tape because Fire, Hot Foot Fire as I call her, who does that show normally, has got to go over the hill. So she's over the hill, or jumped in the lake, she's out to lunch, whatever. She's unable to be here. She called in about an hour ago. And so I'm going to play instead a homeless tape that I made, essentially interviews with David Beauvais of Berkeley, the attorney who was covering my Food Not Bombs case. That's the case of me. I was convicted of serving food in San Francisco, the only person so convicted in a major urban area that I've ever heard of in my life, although two people were convicted down here in Santa Cruz minor urban area in 1989, Brian Flanagan Staley and Sandra Loringer. And they served about 3 weeks in jail. I've been sentenced to 2 months in jail. Apparently it's big time in San Francisco, a bigger crime to serve food to the poor. And that's on appeal. And I should leave in a week or two whether the Court of Appeals will accept my appeal. If they don't, we go directly to the California Supreme Court. If they turn me down, it's zipped back to the original trial court with a request for modification of sentence. They'll say no, and it's off to the big house. Either that or I head for the border. We'll decide what we're doing when that happens. I don't.
And that was an abbreviated edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides for December 11th. And here's the extended edition. We have a little more that was added on an hour later when Bathrobe Spear returned to the studio.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norris live in a secret bootleg extension of Bathrobe's Pierre's Broadsides. I've snuck into the studio here with the egregious Ed Fry. Say hello, Ed, in the second mic, see if we're working here.
Egregious, is it?
Well, some say egregious, no question about it. Others would use other expletives, but maybe it's expletive deleted, Ed Fry.
Thank you. We'll neutralize it.
Indeed. Ed, before we go on to you, I just want to briefly summarize for those who've been listening. You've been listening to two interviews, one with Keith McHenry and one with Bedrock Beauvais, or Katzenjammer Keith and Bedrock Beauvais, as I jokingly call them. One of them is a San Francisco Food Not Bombs activist who's given us a long update on what happened with the San Francisco Food Not Bombs by tape, about a week and a half old, that tape, still quite current. The other, I interviewed David Beauvais, who is my attorney, as well as attorney for other activists in Berkeley. There has been a recent development in my case, the case of this man, me, convicted for serving free food in San Francisco in violation of a court order against Food Not Bombs. I was found guilty in February of 1994, and the case was appealed to the Superior Court. Superior Court has been dawdling around for about a year and a half now, and it found that I was the conviction was appropriate and continued to find me guilty. The conviction was upheld. The two-month sentence then was one I had to deal with. But recently, the Superior Court has agreed to forward the case to the Court of Appeals, which means that if the Court of Appeals accepts the case for consideration, we can sit around for another year and a half and wait for them to make a decision, and we'll see what happens with that. That is a recent development. It means that I'm not as likely to be jailed as soon as I could be, although the Court of Appeals could refuse to hear the case, in which case I could go to jail pretty quick, depending on whether the Supreme Court then refuses the habeas corpus argument that you heard discussed by attorney Bedrock Beauvais. All this, mind you, for giving out a bagel and some rice in 1993. You would think that the city of San Francisco had better things to do in the state of California, but apparently not. You have any reactions to this case? Ed Fry, attorney at law and longtime critic of District Attorney Art Dinger.
Oh, clearly a case of over-prosecution here.
I see. That's your analysis, eh?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm afraid I'd have to agree. Well, Ed, you made your way down to the studio here. I wanted you to kind of give us an update on what's going on in the Art Danner situation. Last time you were here, it was about a week ago, is that right?
I think so.
And has anything happened in the last week that might, shall we say, change the situation in the Art Danner matter?
Well, quite a bit has happened in the last 10 days at least, and I'm not sure exactly when it was I was here last, but basically I'm suing Art Danner to pay back the $40,000 that he paid out to Catherine Gardner. Under the table, he didn't tell anybody he was doing it until after the election was over. So then when I sued, the county then made a motion for summary judgment to get rid of it, saying, well, the Board of Supervisors approved it, so that's the end of it. And the judge didn't agree with that. The judge agreed with my authorities, which I cited to the tune, which said that you can't pay a public employee beyond the last day of service. So he said, no summary judgment for you. You're going to go to trial before a jury.
That was Judge Stevens in late October, early November?
Right.
Late November.
The end of October, and then it sort of dragged on into November.
And then you told us at the last interview that the DA had hired a hotshot attorney and also gotten the county council off the stick, and they had gotten the judge to give you to delay the trial date from January 2nd, when the Art Danner would have been facing a civil trial as to whether he should repay this money that he has pilfered from the public funds.
Right, he'd be on the other side of the jury this time.
But apparently that was put off, mentioned to us.
Yeah, the Judge Black. Immediately when after Judge Stevens denied their motion for summary judgment, they put in a disqualification. So he was out of the case.
So Stevens, because he gave a fair judgment, was dumped quick as a wink.
And then they appointed in his place Judge Robert Yance, and I objected to Judge Yance.
Because Yance was Ed Fry. Art Danner, these two guys, I sometimes confuse them, was Art Danner's campaign manager.
Right, in the 1990 election when I ran against him for the first time. So Judge Yance withdrew after I objected. So then Judge Black handled the interim stuff, like whether or not they could get a continuance of the trial date, and he granted them a continuance from January the 2nd to March the 4th, and gave them the right to make a second motion for summary judgment, which they're preparing, apparently.
So not only did you get your shall we say, objective judge kicked out, not only did the DA get a continuance granted, even though he'd had lots of time to prepare himself for this eventuality, but in addition to that, the whole motion for summary judgment, a second motion is now considered up for grabs. And I think the most recent development was they're going to appeal the first motion for summary judgment to a court of appeals.
They both filed, both the county and the private attorney filed separate petitions for a writ of mandate in the court of appeals, asking that court to overturn Judge Stevens' ruling, which was denying the motion for summary judgment.
So they aren't satisfied with going in for a second attempt to dump your whole case with summary judgment. They're going to challenge the first one as well. It sounds like an attempt to snow you under a legal
blizzard. Yeah, they're throwing paper at us. That's no question about it.
They've got a number of attorneys who can do this, while you don't have much of a resisting force here, except for yours truly over there, right?
That's it. I'm the one. And Art's having to pay $290 an hour for this bulldog lawyer from Palo Alto.
Do we pay that, or does he pay for that?
No, he's paying that himself.
Oh, it comes out of his money for once. Huh? But the county council, you say, is also defending him.
The county council is also doing it.
And that comes out of our pocket.
Because really, Art Danner looks like is dictating to the county council what he's supposed to do.
Well, do you know what they call a cross between, what do you call a cross between a Hitler and a potato?
I give up.
A dictator. Sorry about that. Actually, it's a cross between a penis and a potato, but let's work on this one, shall we?
Yeah.
boy, these little bits of humor keep creeping in. So that's what's happening. Court watchers then are not going to be able to come in to watch your ongoing struggle until March, apparently, right?
Yeah, the trial date is now set for March the 4th.
And what's the media doing aside from ignoring you on this issue?
That pretty much sums it up. They're not wanting to give it any publicity at all, because that Art has pretty much told everybody, I think, that hey, you better not cover this. I don't want any coverage because I don't want them to look any worse than I already do.
Hear you. Now, Is there something more you want to say on the subject? Because I have some other questions on some other topics to ask you as well.
No, that's about
what
it.
What can people do who want to support you, like other attorneys who have henceforth been a little gun-shy of confronting Art Danner? Can they, do you need some help in filing these papers? Would you like people to assist you in this work?
Well, there's a possibility that a law student from the Monterey College of Law will be doing it for some credit, helping out. Any other lawyer who wants to look at the file and see if they can add anything, that'd be great, too.
And how can you be reached?
457-1545.
457-1545. Check that out, all you budding shysters. Get your butts over to the phone and give the egregious Ed, I think we had another name for it at one point. We'll probably have to check our files to find out just what that name was. Give him a call at 457-1545. He needs help in dealing with Drumhead Art Danner, as I call him. And I guess another point I want to ask you on another subject entirely. It has to do with Free Radio Santa Cruz. You've been supportive of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Absolutely.
And doesn't this make you vulnerable to harassment from federal authorities like the FCC, which, for example, is pursuing Free Radio Berkeley?
They already harassed me about 2-3 months ago when we were over on in a different location on my regular Tuesday show from 1 to 2:30. They showed up at about 2:32 p.m. wanting to question me. Unfortunately, I had just left.
So they must have.
Then they called me on the phone and said, "You know what you're doing is illegal, and we can fine you $10,000, and we can seize your assets." And blah, blah, blah. I said, "No, what you're doing is illegal." I said, "You're violating the Constitution, First Amendment." And so we had that disagreement and left it at that. We haven't heard from them since.
And so no legal papers were filed.
Right.
Interesting. You've also been hosting meetings of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective in your office.
Yes.
And how's that been going?
Swimmingly. Every other Sunday night we have a meeting, and everybody's invited who's interested in the radio operation. It's at 201 Maple Street. Next meeting is this coming Sunday at 7 p.m.
And the issues actually have been kind of far-ranging from should a particular individual, Chris Brosda, be excluded to internal concerns about sexism with one broadcaster, to getting out the trash on time, to scheduling circumstances. A whole range of issues gets brought up.
Sure.
Now, I missed the last meeting, so this is my opportunity to fill myself in on what happened. I understand that you've been favoring a concept called quality control. What is that all about?
Well, it's nice to be able to get down in the studio here and play a seventh grader and say fuck, 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 and what's more, fuck, fuck, fuck.
And also fuck, fuck, fuck.
But, you know, that's not real productive of anything as far as I'm concerned.
Doing it produces more than saying it, but hey.
Well, so they say.
So they say.
So I'm not interested in hearing all that. Right. If that's the only thing they want to do, then I think they should find themselves a different place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of messages that have to get put out there, both musical messages as well as political and cultural messages. And we only have a limited amount of space here on the radio, and so somebody has to make some sort of decision as to what's worthwhile and what isn't. And I know a lot of people say, gee, that's dangerous, that sounds like censorship. Well, no, it's not so much censorship as choosing one over another, because we don't have room for everybody. And if you want to, be a talk like a seventh grader whose mom and dad just let him free for the first time out of the closet in 10 years, great, do it, but don't do it so much on our time. Do it here once in a while, but not every day, not every week, not all the time.
And the decision-making process at Free Radio Santa Cruz is what's called the consensus process. So that means that anybody doesn't like something, they can block it, in essence.
Right.
And so I understand that currently this debate is still kind of going on, but there's some strong controversy in the group that some indeed regard this as censorship or some kind of, how would you describe it, censorship, I guess, is the argument I've heard. What we really need, of course, is 200-300 radio stations that will be able to cover whatever people want to put out.
Yeah, if everybody had their own, then it wouldn't be any problem, but they don't, and we don't, so we have to make choices.
It's true.
Everything we do, you're always making choices, and I don't think that this radio station is any different.
You're running for Congress against